Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Top of the hour, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Fan 4-Pack is a fantastic way to enjoy Chicago Wolves hockey. It's four tickets, four hot dogs, four sodas, one large popcorn, and one low price. To get yours, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Hub Arkish, Anthony Herron here on 670 The Score, keeping this thing rolling. We've had a couple of folks on the text line reference, like enjoying us together, and I feel like you and I kind of say this whenever we get to do this, that we would like the opportunity to do it more of, because we chop it up, we talk some football, we get other things in, and it's usually fun.
We could do this in one of our family rooms, man. Yeah, right. Just sitting around talking, it just feels right, and I'm glad that a few people, hopefully more than a few, but some who have texted are enjoying it. Real quick, I want to take care of, I got a texter who says, it's true, not Dre. I don't know what he's referring to. It's Trey Roberson, or Roberson, is the cornerback that the Bears signed. Mm-hmm. If I said Dre, then I was wrong, but it's certainly not true. and he actually was the first true freshman ever to start at quarterback at Indiana. And so he went to Indiana as an athlete. He was a Mr. Indiana high school player. And now is really, I think, only had his 2 years in the CFL at cornerback. So even though he's 27 years old, he's an outstanding young athlete in his prime who appears to have some upside. So,
and we'll see. Like we were talking about as we were rolling initially in the show through some of the draft classes that Ryan Pace has had. So at this point, we've probably kind of fairly gotten through 2017. We'll see if we can kind of work our way through 18 and 19 before the end of the show as well. But we do want to get some movie discussion in too, because the Academy Awards are coming up tonight. Hub's seen most of them. I've seen a few of them, but we both do love the cinema. Let's put it that way. There's been some folks on hold on the line now for a little while now. So we want to get out to that. 312-644-6767 is the way to call in if you do want to continue talking there. And like we referenced, the text line at 670-11, but Charles is out in Gary. He's been on hold for a bit. He's got some thoughts on the discussion we've been having so far. Let's hear from Charles. Charles, you got Hub Arkish and Anthony Herron here on The Score. What's up with you, Charles?
I'm all right. How you guys doing?
Good.
Okay, yeah. I like to say, you know, I'm a Mitch fan. I'm a Mitch of this fan. I'm a Ryan Pitt fan. I think those guys were working good together. You know, and I was a fan. What if you put Patrick Mahomes in a Bears uniform? You know, where would he rank? Where would you put, you know, Deshaun Watson in the Bears uniform? Where would he rank? You know, just switch these guys around, you know, in different situations and see where they go, you know, and see how their career turn out.
Yeah, I suppose, Charles, I mean, that's one of those things that I suppose it can be a fun exercise sometimes. It's obviously just difficult to predict for sure. I think both Watson and Mahomes would be performing at a higher level if they were the Bears quarterback than Mitch is right now. But that goes to the point of one of the other callers earlier who said that, you know, kind of it's all on Matt Nagy. And I think folks who've been listening to me throughout the football season know I've had plenty of issues with the way Matt Nagy has called the offense for where I feel Mitch is in his development right now. But I don't think that means it's all on Matt Nagy. I just think for where Mitch is, Matt Nagy should pare things down in a way that don't put as much of the offensive load on Mitch. But it's still up to Mitch to develop. It's still up to Mitch to get better at reading coverages. And that's the balance between how well are you being taught, how well is that talent being nurtured, what kind of position are you being put in to succeed. But at a certain point, yes, it is certainly on Mitch quite a bit. So that's where with Mahomes, with Watson, I do think, yeah, they would be performing at a higher level if they were here than if they were elsewhere. But, you know, there's more that Matt Nagy has to prove just as an overall NFL head coach, as a play caller, by comparison to an Andy Reid, who we've seen him do it with a variety of QBs.
Yeah, I mean, Charles, I think it's a very fair question. Where I go with this, Patrick Mahomes, to me, let me take a step back. When I get asked over the years, the greatest football player you've ever seen, football player, not position, you know, greatest football player, the only guy who I will put in the conversation with Walter Payton is Brett Favre. And he wasn't the greatest quarterback ever, but he could put an entire team on his back, and he could do it consistently over a, whatever it was, 15, 18-year career. Walter did the same thing here in Chicago. You could put Jim Brown in that conversation, too. Patrick Mahomes is the only current quarterback that I put in that Brett Favre class because of the arm talent, the unique arm talent. He would be good, we now know, wherever he was. Mm-hmm. But here in Chicago, with no tight end, with no running game and only one or two quality receivers as opposed to the best receiving core in the NFL, no, he wouldn't have an MVP award. No, he wouldn't be an All-Pro. I mean, you know, he'd be a really promising young quarterback. Deshaun Watson, I'm one of the guys that I've gotten friendly a lot friendlier with this year is Kurt Warner, who, of course, is a Hall of Fame quarterback, and because we do some broadcasts together for Westwood One. And he and I have gotten into a couple long conversations about this, and he's not the only one I've heard this from. Kurt Warner still expresses doubts about Deshaun Watson because as much as we've seen the incredible athletic things he can do, you know, you talked about it in the last hour, and coming out of school, you know, turning the ball over. Mm-hmm. He clearly holds the ball too long. I mean, he's got a bad offensive line, and so maybe that's the reason. But his decision-making is really questionable as to whether he is ever going to fulfill his potential. This is the stuff you don't hear when we talk about Mitch. But you know, that's where these guys really are right now. But at the end of the day, I don't care who the quarterback is. Asking them to run this offense in particular without the threat of a running game is going to diminish their potential a little bit. Now, it's not an excuse. Mitch needs to be better than he's been, but it certainly has been an issue, I think.
And that's where the discussion then ends up, you know, where you get folks on the text line or callers, you know, like I've become, you know, from being the guy who immediately on draft night said, yeah, they took the wrong guy, to now I'm the defender of all things Mitch, because I'm saying they need to, the offense needs to be geared towards essentially shielding him like a lot of other offensive play callers do shield and deflect the overall pressure, the volume of the offense being off the shoulders of the quarterback. Prime example, the team that just went to the Super Bowl that doesn't ask Jimmy Garoppolo to do very much unless they need to.
I think we can take it one step further. You and I were both right that night saying they took the wrong guy. I mean, we've seen enough now to know that, okay? Right. But that said, if they give him the tight end and the running game and a left tackle, he may turn out to be the right guy in terms of winning championships. Yeah. And even though Mahomes, we now know, was the right guy, he might not be if he ended up with a team like what the Bears personnel on offense is right now.
Yeah, that's where, you know, that question could end up, you know, dovetailing into so many different versions of this topic, because it's all conjecture and just kind of moving pieces around. We got I see the phone line still lit up. John appears on I-94. Looks like he's been on hold for quite a bit. Let's hear from John here. You're on the line with Hub Arkish and Anthony Heron on the Score. What's up, John?
Hey guys, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Listen, I just wanted to comment on the Trubisky thing. Last season, during the season, probably in October, there was a very long article in the Chicago Tribune on Sunday about Trubisky. And within that article was a chart that showed the draft experts' rankings of these three quarterbacks, you know, just before the big draft. And Mel Kiper was on it, Sports Illustrated guy. I can't remember all their names. You may know what I'm referring to, but I was quite surprised. Roughly 10 out of 12 had Trubisky ranked first, ahead of Mahomes and ahead of Watson. And, Hub, you alluded to the idea that, you know, generally Mahomes was considered behind the others. But in this case, most of these experts had Trubisky first. And I'm not a pace apologist, and it sounds like he shouldn't have moved up for the pick, but you can't rewrite the history books. He had company. Mm-hmm. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah.
Well, John, I know exactly what you're talking about, because we, being Greg Gabriel, who was working with us at Pro Football Weekly at the time, were one, and we actually had Deshaun Watson first. But what you're talking about is knowledgeable folks, but not guys whose living depended on it. I go a step further and poll general managers and personnel directors, but got the same information, and I've alluded to it several times. Not only did a lot of evaluators have Mitch first, but almost none of them had Mahomes first. Mm. But you know what, Anthony? It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
I mean, at the end of the day, and this is where I try and, you know, do the best job we can laying this out for folks, the Bears missed, based on where we're at today, Ryan Pace does deserve a hit for that. There's no question about it. What, you know, whatever everybody else thought, even though he was in the majority, you know, it doesn't help, I guess, is where I'm going with this, unless this is the year that Mitch arrives. And what Bears fans need to understand is, while it now looks like a much longer shot than it did in 2017, it's not too late, you know, so right. We'll see what happens.
Since we were getting through the draft cycles from 15, 16, 17, I'll kind of quickly roll through the 2018 draft, and maybe we'll take a timeout, and I do want to kind of get into some of our movie discussions because the Oscars are coming up tonight. You got Hub Arkish and Anthony Heron here on 670 The Score. He's on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. I'm on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. It sounds like we'll both at least be paying mild, if not detailed, attention to the Academy Awards tonight. But I won't do that now. We will get to some of that later on this hour, though. But to continue our draft discussion we were having earlier, the 2018 draft was the one where I felt like Ryan Pace started to take what I felt like were more proven commodities. I felt like 15, 16, 17, there were so many picks that I felt like, all right, that guy's kind of a project. Okay, that guy looks developmental, even right at the top of it with what we discussed in the previous segment about taking Mitch with the number two pick in the 17 draft. 2018, said it here on the station a bunch of times. It was the very first time, and I said it to Roquan Smith's face right there in Dallas after the Bears picked him up. He was the first guy I felt like the Bears took a first-round pick that I said he was ready day one to be an immediate impact player, to be an immediate starter for the Chicago Bears and play at a high level when he did it. And that turned out to be the case there. He was just a ready-made, modern inside linebacker. And when he's been on the field and been healthy and been engaged, he's been everything the Bears could have hoped for. Now, obviously, there was the weird sort of saga that played out over a few weeks in the midst of the season here where he you know, is taken out of the lineup for a game and whatever the off-field issues that were going on there. The Bears were working with him, and he got through that and then returned. And I felt like initially there was a game or two where he still seemed maybe a bit out of it after they got him back into the lineup, and then it got to a stretch of the season where he was playing like one of the best linebackers in football. And so that, to me, was really fun to watch. He got Roquan Smith at the top of that 18 draft, a definite and obvious hit there. James Daniels, another guy who, from a draft standpoint, his college resume, proven commodity, made perfect sense. You needed that in the second round. The results on the field between guard and center have still been a bit mixed. I think at this point, for a guy who's only been in the league 2 years, I'm trying not to
have this. Who's only 22 years old, by the way.
Only 22 years old. I'm trying not to have this being framed by and painted by my fellow Hawkeye-dom as a guy who's drafted out of the University of Iowa. But a beyond promising prospect is a guy who can play multiple positions on the interior of the offensive line. Anthony Miller was the guy I tweeted about before the draft. I hope they find a way to get him in that middle round area somewhere, whether it's round three, round two, they got him. And he's been at times a bit up and down mentally as much as anything. But we've seen he's a guy who has been able to help Mitch take over a few games here as he really rounded into form with this offense. Then from there, Bilal Nichols, we were talking about earlier. I mean, that to get Bilal Nichols in the fifth round, a guy who immediately as a rookie looked like, all right, this is not only a starter, but a guy who may be a shop wrecker in the NFL with the way he can make plays in the backfield. It was a great pick, and Javon Wims has shown flashes. Kylie Fitz never really flashed at any point that he was on the active roster for the Bears. But overall, say the 2018 draft, I think that one's one that looks really good for Ryan Pace.
Well, and then you plug in the free agent group there, and you look at, you know, Cody Parkey's a miss. There's no question about it. And I didn't understand it at the time, only because he didn't have a deep enough leg to get $15 million. I mean, it was one that the minute they did it, you scratch. But Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Trey Burton all had big impacts on that 12-4 team, and Allen Robinson even a bigger impact this year. Taylor Gabriel fine until the concussions kicked in. Obviously, Trey Burton hurt. Bradley Sowell became a very valuable swing tackle lineman. I mean, I didn't really get the conversion to tight end. That's not going to work out. And then, you know, Chase Daniel, Aaron Lynch had a big impact on that defense. The combination of that free agent class and that draft class is why he was voted the NFL Executive of the Year. You know, I mean, and guys, this isn't opinion. These are the facts, you know, so right. I don't know what else we can tell you about it.
Oh, the phone lines still have a couple of callers on them, but we will, we need to take a, let's take a quick timeout, come back, and let's dovetail into a bit of a movie discussion. And I think there's a way that we can even make the Oscars coming up tonight work with the context of Ryan Pace's time as Bears general manager, not only in discussing the Academy Awards coming up this evening, but in what way that sort of, you know, helps shape the way we can kind of view the current Chicago Bears situation with Ryan Pace as their general manager. He is Hub Arkish. I am Anthony Herron. The phone lines will stay open. We're just going to shift the discussion a bit so you can continue to call in at 312-644-6767. Text lines open at 67011. This show can be tweeted at 670 The Score. He is on Twitter at Hub_Arkish. I am on Twitter at Big Ann Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
You seen that movie?
For anyone wondering, Mark Trestman's debut in the XFL, not going so well so far for Tampa Bay. He's the head coach of Tampa Bay. They've got 3 points on the board in the fourth quarter facing New York. 23-3 lead for New York over Tampa Bay. So Trestman, good game one, week one. We'll see how things continue from there.
One other note about this, because we actually Herb and Rick, Rick Camp and Herb Lawrence were on before us, and they were talking about this. And I've been trying to glance up and watch the football part of it. They seem to be making a concerted effort in this broadcast not to show anything of the stands or showing the first 10 rows up from the field.
Right.
On the couple shots where it couldn't be avoided, they are playing to what appears to, I can't say for sure because we're not getting the, but it appears to be a mostly empty MetLife Stadium. And so that's one of these issues that you face.
I think I spotted like four people in the
stands. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that is part of the conversation as we try and figure out how this is going to work out.
So that the discussion will continue as we all love watching football whenever available, but just how much and how consistently we watch it will be a part of the experiment for the XFL. But not as much XFL talk coming up this hour as we had in hour number one, because the Academy Awards are coming up this evening, and Hub has seen the majority of the pictures that are up for Best Picture, right? I've seen a few of them and some of the performances out there for the acting categories also.
Yeah, I've seen The Irishman. I have seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I have seen The Joker. I have seen Ford versus Ferrari. It's easier to do the other way.
Which one do you haven't seen?
I did not watch Marriage Story, which a friend of mine last night, who I respect, he's brilliant. He's the head of the biology department at the University of Miami. He's on the board of this. He's a PhD in neurobiology. So he's got some creds for being smart. We have the same taste in movie. But he said that Marriage Story, and he'd seen them all, was clearly the best. And he liked the writing. He said the acting from Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson is just brilliant. Laura Dern is probably going to win the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. The reason I haven't seen that movie is because all I got to do is hear the topic and it says depressing to me. And if I want to get depressed, I just turn on the news, you know, and so I'm not going to go out of my way. If it's a true story, then I'm okay with it because it's true. But fictional depression.
Feel like you're learning something.
Yeah, and so again, this is just me. Everybody should go see the movie. Apparently, it's brilliant. I just kind of stayed away from that one. But I have seen all the rest of them. Let me start with this. There are, I believe, two slam dunks. Okay, Renee Zellweger is going to win Best Actress, and Judy is not a brilliant flick. The makeup people, I mean, you would believe that it was really Judy Garland. And Renee Zellweger does not really look like Judy Garland. But in this movie, it is unbelievable. And her performance, one of the best I've ever seen. And so I will be stunned if she does not win Best Actress. Likewise, Joaquin Phoenix is going to win Best Actor for The Joker, because while that was a movie that I did not like, it was just so dark. And again, taking a fictional, you know, it's about the Joker and Batman and Gotham City, and taking fantasy and making it that dark. And this is just taste again. I'm sure some people raved about it. It did nothing for me. As a matter of fact, about halfway through the movie, my wife stopped me from turning it off because it just wasn't, you know, but his performance. Now, what's interesting about that, though, is apparently he is not well-liked in Hollywood. And this is his peers voting. So I suppose he could lose out, but I'll be shocked if they don't win the two big acting awards.
It does seem that he's almost been on a bit of a mea culpa kind of tour here over the last few weeks, as he's begun to win some awards and he's had some, you know, some sort of retrospective types of moments where he's just talked about how he's behaved, how he's been perceived, and those types of things, where he's, you know, he's still seemingly kind of a weird dude. And, you know, of course, I haven't met Joaquin Phoenix, but then, you know, I've seen, I think it was maybe, I don't know if it was 60 Minutes or someone did a sit down with him a couple of weeks ago that I watched. And it was, you know, even looking at his childhood and his brother River Phoenix and, you know, committing suicide when they were young and some of those things. It just had a different upbringing that kind of shapes who he is as a person. He seems to be trying to, I guess, be a little more inviting, a little more welcoming to folks. But, yeah, he definitely seems like a slam dunk there. I did see Marriage Story, and I don't think it's going to win Best Picture. I did like it. I think for a film about that, and I was even, after I watched it, I tweeted about it a little bit, and Julie DeCaro had a similar reaction to you. So, you know, that's not a topic. That's not a movie I'm really interested in watching. And really, my tweet about the movie was, as my wife and I were watching it, we just found ourselves throughout the movie just kind of hugging each other a little more, like a little closer, kind of every half hour we were just kind of hugging each other a little bit tighter, just because it got really uncomfortable. And for anyone out there who's married, you understand how, you know, some fights become bigger fights and different things from the past get thrust into this moment or that moment, especially now that my wife and I have a 2-year-old, then there's that element in the movie as well, where they have a young son who they're going through the divorce and trying to figure out how to make all that work. So it was a very uncomfortable watch. I wouldn't put it in the same category as movies that were just fully depressing, like Leaving Las Vegas, one of the most depressing movies I've ever seen. Manchester by the Sea, maybe the only movie more depressing than Leaving Las Vegas was Manchester by the Sea. And I thought it was just a constant downer that entire way. I wouldn't put Marriage Story in that category. There are some lighthearted moments. The performances, both by Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, where Adam Driver already felt like he was a really high-level actor. Scarlett Johansson, I thought she was a movie star who's been in a lot of good movies, who I enjoy on film. I didn't know she had these levels that she kind of hit as an actress in that movie. I was impressed with her more than I anticipated.
You know, you just reminded me, Manchester by the Sea, one of the best movies I've ever seen, no doubt. And again, Casey Affleck, another one with some off the field stuff. I don't know anything about it. But to me, no doubt that he deserved that Oscar. And yet, with the highest praise I can give a movie, I think I was unhappy for like a week after it. You know, so
there's no urge to watch it again.
No, you know, so that's where you make these choices. Hey, and real quick, we got a couple callers here, and apparently somebody who had texted. I didn't go after any texters, but I may not have been kind to him. So, Tom, we're going to get to you in a little while.
Okay.
If you have calls about movies, just for the next few minutes while we're talking about them, let's stay with what we're on. So Anthony, I had an interesting take. I don't know. I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Other people may not. And I have not found a lot of people who agree with me. But of all the top movies, which, again, I've seen, and it's hard to do this without giving spoiler alerts for people who haven't seen them. So we're going to try not to do that. Okay. But I will tell you that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, excellent movie that I thoroughly enjoyed until the last 15 minutes or so, when Quentin Tarantino did what he obviously feels some obligation to do. And in my mind, he kind of ruined a good movie, okay. You know, and it wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
I thought, Parasite, which is the one that everybody's talking about.
Right, yeah.
And Bernsey, our colleague here, tweeted out that one of, I don't know if he said the best or one of the best movies he's ever seen. And I wasn't anxious to watch it prior to that. I've gotten more used to subtitles. Okay. They still are a little bit of a distraction to me. I watched the movie. Subtitles didn't bother me at all. There were some very entertaining things about it through the first half or so. And then it's another movie that takes a turn, and I just said, and I don't want to ruin it for you, but I said to myself, why'd they do that? Mm. You know, it came out of nowhere. It didn't fit in the movie, and it ruined the movie for me. And so I came away thinking, that's 2 hours of my life I'll never get back. You know, and yet there's other people who are raving about this movie.
Right,
so
it's
really all taste. As I said, Joker, brilliant performance. I loved The Irishman. Although it clearly was 45 minutes too long, at the least.
at least. Yeah.
I think that Robert De Niro is being punished for being one of the greatest actors of all time. To not get a nomination, to me, is absurd. Mm. For Scorsese, is Scorsese nominated? I don't think he is.
I don't believe he was.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't done well in the others. Joe Pesci and Al Pacino were nominated for supporting actor by SAG.
Joe Pesci was really good in that.
They were both outstanding. I mean, Pacino can get to be a bit much sometimes. I thought this was one of his better performances, actually.
In a while, yeah.
But at the end of the day, because it was not these incredible Hall of Famers breaking new ground, I understand why it's not going to win a lot of awards. Jojo Rabbit, interesting, you know, entertaining, just not great to me, you know, but a really good movie. The one that nobody really talks about, I voted for best movie, which was Ford versus Ferrari.
Okay.
It's a really fun couple hours. There's people you can cheer for. There's good guys. There's bad guys. It's based on a true story. I just loved everything about it. And if somebody came to me and said, of all these movies, if you could only see one, which one would you see? That's the one that I would see. And I'm not hearing anybody else agree with me on that. So, yeah, we'll see.
From what it sounds like, because my wife and I, with the two-year-old, we kind of got to a point where we used to see everything. Even if we knew a movie was going to be bad, we'd go watch it anyway because we like the experience of being in the theater, having the popcorn, and just watching it on the big screen and everything like that. We don't do that as much anymore because we have a toddler. But the way that my football season and the calendar of it is structured, as I'm sure you have a similar experience, there's just not a lot of time during the football season to go out and experience any of that. And I'm gone a lot with all my stuff I'm doing on the West Coast with the Pac-12. So since I'm out of town half the week, she doesn't get to really go see movies. I certainly don't either. But now this part of the year where she still likes to try and get all the Oscar movies in before the Academy Awards happen. So she's seen a lot more of them this year than I have. So I haven't seen Ford versus Ferrari yet. But she had a very similar description to you. And in a way where she said it was almost like it wasn't, I don't think, produced by Disney, but it had a little bit of that feel to it. But it was kind of just well done in the aspect that it, you know, didn't necessarily take any real gratuitous sort of turns. You know, everything just kind of stayed in its lane, and they executed it pretty well, and good performances, and a story that you could follow well enough. And it put me in the mind of kind of Hidden Figures in that way too, where it's a true story, and you know, there was some depth to it, and folks you could root for, and everything else. But that was a movie where I felt like, yeah, it's very easy to kind of root for that movie, not just because it had the racial storyline of what those women were going through at the time, but also just the craft of the movie and how it played out. But with The Irishman, I just watched that one last night, and whatever it is, almost 3.5 hours in length. I thought it at least 45 minutes, maybe an hour shorter, and all the same things could have been accomplished.
Well, I was going to say, we could even make the edits ourselves. I mean, you know, right, what they probably could have done without. So,
and to, if they would have done that, I would have been able, and you know, I sat through it and enjoyed it and whatever else, but I did feel like it was so long without really needing to be. Yeah. And then there's certain actors who pop up here and there, like Anna Paquin's in it for a chunk of the movie. I'm like, I don't know, are they going to get any more out of her? Guess not. But overall, and then it just sort of ends. So I thought it was fine. I don't really have, especially because of the length and urge to watch The Irishman again, where there's so many other Scorsese movies where whenever they're on, I get hooked and I want to sit there and tune in again. The Irishman wasn't one of those for me.
Well, no, and the other problem with it is that if you've seen Goodfellas, which is one of the all-time great movies, I think, this was another version of a similar, not the same story, but a similar story.
Casino, so, to some extent. Like, I think it gets a little repetitive with him.
So real quick, there's a texter here, but there's a movie I've left out, and I don't mean to. What you just said about needing to be in the theater, of all the movies, and for those of you just joining us, Anthony and I were talking an hour or two ago. I'm actually a member of SAG and AFTRA because I have to be. And by the way, it's a good union. I don't take that wrong. I'm proud to be a member of SAG and AFTRA. And so I'm a voter in the SAG Awards, and we get screeners. So we get a lot of these either on DVD or we get private access codes to stream them or whatever. So that's how we got to see a lot of these. But the one that I was determined to see in the theater for all the reasons you just said was 1917. Mm. 1917 is a brilliant movie. Sam Mendes, outstanding job. He may win Best Director. That would not surprise me. And I have nothing negative to say about it. It just kind of came in second or third for me with a bunch of good movies. But 1917, an outstanding flick. I think it will struggle because there are no name act. Well, there's actually a couple name actors hidden in it. You don't know that you're looking at Kenneth Branagh or Cumberbatch. What's his name?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
But a great movie. But real quick to this texter, Hub, I challenge you to say how either of those movies should have ended. I don't think there's a better way to end either. So I had just made the comment about Parasite and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. unfortunately, I'm not ignoring your text. I can't answer you without ruining spoiling the movies for anybody who hasn't seen them. But I think I can say something that will not surprise anybody about one of them. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is Tarantino. And as you have to expect when you go to it, there is some gratuitous violence at the end. It just wasn't necessary. You know, I mean, there was a lot of other ways to do it. And I like Tarantino, you know, a little different, you know, but had he done it differently this time, he could have accomplished the same purpose. And that was kind of what bothered me about the movie. And I'm not going to say anything else because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. So.
Yeah, and I don't think that one will come as a big surprise for anyone who has seen, watched, appreciated Quentin Tarantino's movies over the years. So that was your primer for the Academy Awards. If you do want to call in and discuss that in any greater detail, you can feel free to do that. Preferably, you won't spoil it for anyone out there. But there are still a couple of callers on the line, even from our pre-existing discussion we were having about the Bears and Bulls and everything else going on in the Chicago sports scene. So we'll take a time out. We'll come back and get back to the phone lines for anything you want to discuss at 312-644-6767. Text line at 67011. He is on Twitter at @Hub_Arcus. I'm on Twitter at @BigAntHeron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. So we told you who should win all the Oscars tonight. I'm sure you'll still tune in and figure out whether or not we were right or wrong or anything else to that extent. Anthony Heron and Hub Arcus here on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score. Mike Chen on the other side of the glass holding it down. I feel like Mike Chen is here for, I don't know, 12, 15, 18 hours at a time on occasion. So you probably showed up early this morning. Still
yeah,
on the clock,
here,
right?
No worries. It's all cool. It's all good.
Just doing push-ups the entire time he's there. We're putting our work in. He puts his work in, burning calories as much as possible. But great work by Mike Chen throughout the show so far. Putting some info together to help craft our Ryan Pace draft discussion. See Studs over there showing up to take Mike Chen off the clock. Adam Studzinski. And is Sean Anderson still back there? Did Sean finally hit the road?
No, Sean left. I think he's taking a nap.
Oh, okay. All right. It's probably well-earned. Probably well-earned by the guys over there on the other side of the glass. But the phone lines were still lit up. The folks were being patient with us as we kind of got into a different lane here to talk some movies from what our experience has been for some of the ones that are nominated for the Academy Awards tonight. But since you were kind enough to stay on hold, we will be kind enough to continue our discussion that we were having earlier about anything that you folks want to talk about. But a lot of the discussion, since it's Hub and it's me, a lot of the discussion has been about football, started with the XFL, and certainly has dovetailed into some detailed discussion on the Bears. So we can get back to some of those things as we have Tony on the line out in Addison. Tony's been on hold for quite a while now. Tony, what's up? You got a Hub and Ann on the Score.
Yeah, I usually talk to Les Grapstein during the night because I get on right away, but, you know, it's longer. I never talked to you before his first time. So, anyway, I asked this question before, and I always joke about the offensive line or something to myself. But I talked to him about this, about, like, it doesn't get talked about that much. But, you know, how they're the only players on the team that don't really collect any stats. All they do is, like, pass block or run block. And they don't collect any stats like the other positions on the other team, on the parts of the team. And I'm thinking, my question is, how do you judge it? Like, how good offensive linemen are good or how bad they are? Because they only work as a unit. They don't work as an individual because they don't collect any stats individually, just as a unit. So I've always wondered about that for years, and I don't hear that question discussed that much. So,
well, yeah, Tony, the answer is pretty simple. You watch a lot of tape. And like any other position in the game, they have job descriptions, responsibilities, and requirements. And you know, how well they meet them is how you grade them. And then you can add physicality, you can add attitude. One of the things I've always loved in offensive linemen is nastiness. You assume that every NFL player has it, but I, you know, Anthony, you're better suited to comment on this than I am. I know you were on the other side of the ball, but no other player in the game has to receive attacks the way the offensive linemen do.
Right.
You know, they are waiting for somebody to attack them. Now in the run game, sometimes you can be the attacker, but in the pass game, you certainly can't. And so that's why that nastiness is a really important, you know, quality in these guys. You know, but at the end of the day, you grade them on their technique, on their level of success. You know, there have been some offensive linemen with awful technique who never get beat, you know, and so, but there are, you know, just certain clear measurements by which you can stack up any group of offensive linemen.
Right. And specifically with individual matchups, where when you see a guy get beat for a sack, then certainly that's something where it's a little easier for folks to quickly downgrade. But then you even go beyond that and you look at How frequently was the team put in a third and long scenario? How frequently was the quarterback holding the ball, like to the point that was being made earlier about Deshaun Watson, and certainly Mitch Trubisky here in Chicago has been guilty of it in holding the ball too long on occasion, or especially the bigger issue I have with Mitch at times is where you can run yourself into sacks. And so those are things that statistically it's part of what folks view as a problem with the O-line, but can be something that goes towards other positions, towards the quarterback and beyond as well. But you know, the simplest way is exactly what Hub said it off the top in answering your question. It's if you've been watching this game for a while and evaluating individual players, going beyond the statistics, you don't know exactly what each individual play design calls for at all times. But more frequently than not, you can at least get a sense for what the blocking scheme was after the ball gets snapped and whether or not, once you go back and take a closer look at it, if a guy got defeated on that individual play or if he didn't. So that's a big part of what just goes into it as it relates to the offensive line. So thanks. Good question, Tony. Let's stick with it. We have Tom, who was, as Hub was referencing, a texter who was texting early and wanted to call in and have a discussion as well. We got Tom. You are with Hub Arcus and Anthony Heron on the Score. What's up, Tom?
Good afternoon, Hub and Anthony. This is, as I mentioned, the double exclamation point for question mark guy.
All right. Punctuation guy.
So I was just calling in, guys, because Hub, I normally agree with a lot of things you have to say, but today I'm just really confused and I just need some clarification on some of the arguments that you made. So earlier today, you made the argument that you can see a scenario where Mitch might be a better quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo. Mm-hmm. Your argument was that Mitch is more athletic. And then that's kind of where you stopped. You then also said that their arm talent might be equal, but the only difference is that Jimmy is more accurate, can actually read defenses, and that he's taken his team to a Super Bowl. My thing is, isn't that accuracy and the ability to read defenses exactly what separate good quarterbacks from the bad ones? Are you trying to sell Bears fans that we should cling on to Mitch's athleticism? And then also finally, because you kind of called me out and that you said that it was my opinion that Mike Glennon wasn't an absolute miss. So how is he not an absolute miss? Isn't that pretty much agreed upon by everyone? They just threw a bunch of money at him, which could have gone to other places. And he was just awful. So sorry, guys. I know I'm fired up for a Sunday, but you know, those are some things that just caught my attention. I just wanted to call in and hear what you had to say.
Tom, yeah, there's nothing to be sorry for starters. Yeah. I mean, we're doing talk radio here. Nobody's mad or taking anything personally. Yeah. I don't, you know, and again, we have tape. I'd have to go back and listen. But with everything you just said, I don't think I said anything about accuracy. I don't recall.
I don't recall you saying
that. No, I did not say that.
You did mention the arm talent. You did mention Mitch's athleticism.
And I think what I said, if anything, is Mitch's arm talent is slightly better. Mm-hmm. But Tom, at the end of the day, well, let me take the Mike Glennon part first. You're entitled to your opinion.
Which you did describe in detail earlier, by the way,
yeah,
but feel
free
to repeat it.
Nobody can say if you're right or wrong. Your opinion is your opinion, and I respect it. I just disagree, that's all. On Mike Glennon, he was brought here to be a backup. He was brought here to be a placeholder, and that's what he is in the NFL. So, you know, and everybody gets hung up on the $18 million part, which I agree was a lot of money. But this was a team that was rolling in cap space that has to spend a certain amount to get to the minimum over a rolling four-year average. And the $18 million was still far less than what starting quarterbacks are getting.
And it was effectively a one-year deal.
It was a one-year deal, yeah. And so when I say it wasn't an absolute miss, it certainly wasn't a get. You know, it's not something I'm giving him credit for. I'm just saying that to hang pace out for it is silly because most of the people I talked to around the league agreed with him. I mean, Glennon is still a backup in the league, and it wasn't that awful. Okay, so now getting to your main question, the point I was trying to make was really more how disappointed I was in Jimmy Garoppolo in the Super Bowl than how good or bad Mitch is. But you know, the answer, Jimmy Garoppolo was not accurate. That was part of the problem. His completion percentage was nice because he spent so much time this year throwing to running backs. But if you watch that Super Bowl, even when he was playing well, his completions, he was throwing behind guys, they were making great catches. And so all I'm doing is I'm looking at the tape of that game of Jimmy Garoppolo and comparing it to tape of several games that Mitch Trubisky played. And I saw what I said I saw, which is that Mitch is a better athlete. He's more of a threat with his legs. He has, if anything, the same or a bigger arm. Mitch's accuracy has been a problem. Garoppolo's accuracy was a problem in that game. I mean, hey, even after falling behind 24-20, he's got Emmanuel Sanders, you know, 4 or 5 yards behind a double team, and he misses him by 5 yards, or else they're in the lead again, you know. So, you know, Tom, those were the points, basically. And again, let me finish where I started. I respect your opinion. We're just disagreeing. That's all it is.
And it's not to say that that Mitch is going to be great for sure, because that's not how he's looked so far. But I think that
real quick, I don't mean to interrupt, but because I know you're going to have to run. I'm going to go solo for about 45 minutes here. There've been a couple textures here. This is going to happen all the time. Making excuses for him, you know, defending him. Guys, listen, clean out your ears. We haven't done any of that. We've tried to analyze, you know, where he's at. Mitch Trubisky doesn't need me or Anthony Heron to make excuses for him. Yeah. I mean, it's up to Mitch Trubisky what kind of player he's going to be. It's just the whole point of a lot of this conversation has been to get people off of their opinions that are based on being unwilling to listen to the other side, and just to say there are really two sides to the story. I don't know if I'm saying that right or not, Anthony. Maybe you put it differently.
Well, I think, you know, some folks might be accustomed to just tuning into sports radio and just hearing somebody yelling that because a loss happened or because stats don't look good, that means that everyone's awful. And that's just not the case. That's just not how it works at most levels of sports, and certainly in professional sports. There's nuance. There's reasons that things are going well that aren't going well. And right now, I think Hub and I would probably both agree Mitch Trubisky is not a high-level quarterback. I would certainly say that I don't think Mitch Trubisky was utilized as well this past season, as I've said a bunch on this radio station and others, certainly TV stations around town, as he could have been or should have been. But specifically, the question that Tom was asking about, you know, with his Jimmy Garoppolo text and kind of what we were discussing a bit earlier, Jimmy Garoppolo is a quarterback and Josh Allen is a quarterback. Those are two guys who I view as being in systems where – you know, Josh Allen, a bigger, you know, guy in stature, but uses his mobility, and Buffalo's offense is geared towards that. San Francisco's offense, while Jimmy Garoppolo certainly isn't as mobile as Mitch, their offense is still geared towards constant sprint action, constant boot action, and movement of the pocket and leading with the ground attack, thus diminishing the quarterback's role in having to win the game from the pocket as a volume passer. And two offenses that are different, throw the Baltimore Ravens in there as well, another third different offense than what the Bears run, but it's organizations that are recognizing where the quarterback is at in their development and saying, you know what, we don't need to say win it with your right arm from the pocket on a consistent basis. And that's to me where I think, because of where Mitch is, because Mitch is not a high-level quarterback from the pocket, but he does have other traits that could be accentuated better, that's where I hope the Bears offense grows towards.
If I had to summarize it, I would say that based on what I've seen to this point, I expect that Mitch is going to fail because, you know, based on what they paid for him and taking him with the second overall pick, very good is the floor. That's the minimum. And we haven't seen anything yet to suggest that is going to happen. What I'm not willing to do is write him off because
say the evaluation's
he
done
has
for
the
a third
physical
year.
Ability
right.
to succeed. What I fear is lacking is what separates the very good ones from everybody else, which is the intuitive feel, the head for the game. And we just haven't seen it. But you know, for all you haters, you're probably right, you know, based on what we've seen, but it's just not proven yet, I guess is all I'm trying to say.
Couldn't agree more. He is Hub Arkish. I am Anthony Heron. We'll take a timeout, come back. You'll get Hub rolling solo for the next 45 minutes, which phone lines tend to light up when Hub is rolling solo, so you'll continue to get more of that Bears discussion. And also, we didn't get to the 2019 draft in our kind of season-by-season breakdown of Ryan Pace's success and or lack thereof with the draft classes that he's drafted since being the Bears general manager. So that leaves a season that has really been, you know, very lightly touched that Hub can get into in more depth. Until leading you all the way up to Bulls basketball, they are on the road in Philadelphia taking on the 76ers. That game will be right here on The Score. Hub, as always, so much fun, and I hope we get to do it again very, very soon.
I really do, Anthony. I don't know where 4 hours have gone. This has been a blast. And just so you don't leave with any unanswered questions, there's a couple texts that came in late. If you trust our texters, which I do tend to do, the last Stones album was a cover album. It was a blues cover album. So there's no new material in this. And I love this text. Hub, always love your commentary. But Keith Moon was overrated. So, and much like Mitch Trubisky, I respect your opinion, dude.
We'll take a timeout. Come right back here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.